The most action-packed content from the top mobile experts. This is the App Masters Podcast with Steve P. Young.
The world's best subscription apps use RevenueCat to power in-app purchases, manage customer data, and grow revenue on iOS, Android, and the web. With RevenueCat, I can easily see my most important metrics. What are those? That's install the trial the paid, and LTV. And now they have a new paywall feature that's going to make it easy for you to build high converting paywalls and, more importantly, A/B tests without needing a new build. Learn more at RevenueCat.com. That, once again, is RevenueCat.com. Notix is an audience re-engagement service based on web and in-app push notifications that work for both desktop and mobile devices. With Notix, website app owners and marketers can share their content and interact with their audiences in a highly engaging channel, while still having the opportunity to monetize both mobile and web subscribers. Learn more by visiting notix.co. That is notix.co. What is up, App Nation? It is Steve P. Young, founder of AppMasters.com, and welcome to the podcast, YouTube live stream that's going to help you grow your app downloads and your revenues. And since Valentine's Day is coming up next Wednesday, I thought I'd bring in my sexy voice for this particular episode and a great founder who's going to talk all about how she's built a relationship app that helps you really manage. It's really meant for busy couples. And we're going to really talk about how she thought about the features that would bring users back every day, including the launch strategy that she deployed to particularly put this app into the marketplace. She's doing pretty well from a revenues perspective, but I'll let her tell you everything that you got to know. So without further ado, let's bring in Erica Palmer. Erica, welcome to the show.
Hey, Stu. Thank you so much for having me.
So here's the app. It is called Coupla for those who are interested. Look, as a married man with a couple of kids, Erica, I love this type of app because things get crazy. And I think, you know, as you and I started talking, it's really like meant to connect because life gets in the way. And sometimes it's our partner that suffers the most through it all.
100%. Whenever we're busy, you know, we've got competing demands, work, kids, social lives. It's usually our partner that sort of is the one that takes the sacrifice because they're always going to be there, right? So,
yeah.
And that's definitely what we found.
I know the topic of the day is how you've built these features that keep users coming back every day. Was that something you thought of even before you launched the app?
No. So
I love the honesty. Thank you.
You know, I'd love to be able to say that, you know, right from inception, we were really clever about it. But I think in reality, the story is a little less romantic. So my husband and I, we were both really busy entrepreneurs and we had our own businesses. He had a tech business, data analytics in the film industry, and I was running a big stage show that was touring across Australasia. So both incredibly busy, throw a couple of kids in the mix. We're both busy social people and things were just like, you know, we were missing each other. We weren't really, you know, we couldn't really see when our schedules were going to collide and allow us for that quality time. And then and so it was like sort of a problem that we were facing every day. And then to top it off, when it was date night, you know, in his turn to book, he didn't really know what to do. And we ended up reverting to the, you know, sort of doing the same thing again and again. And it was, you know, that gloss that you feel when you're first in a relationship was starting to wear off a bit.
Yeah.
And so when COVID hit, obviously, film industry and events were sort of, you know, both of our businesses came to a standstill, and that afforded us some time to really think about, well, we've been having this problem in coordinating our times and you know, and going on amazing date nights. Maybe we should try and solve that. And so we started Coupla. But and originally the product was sort of, was probably more extensive than what you'd see on the App Store now. So the product as it stands is a shared calendar that links all of your calendars. So I had multiple calendars. Yeah, so on screen you'll see my calendar's on the left, my partner's calendar is on the right, and then those shared events grow across the middle there. And that's really a sort of our aha moment, our secret sauce. And so it links all of my calendars, so work, other family calendars, you know, et cetera, into the app alongside my partner's. We've got shared to-dos. And then we also had a date planning feature where users could set a goal for how often they want to go on date night. And then the app would remind you to sort of make sure that you've got that quality time booked in. So that's sort of the app that's available now. When we first launched, we were really focused on the idea of, you know, making date nights amazing. And so what we actually went out with was a whole lot of amazing, you know, beautiful local content of what you could do on date night. And it actually took users right through. We'd done a booking integration with a restaurant aggregator. And it took users through the whole process of actually being able to book a date night within the app. So you could see, I'll give you an example. So you could see that date night, you know, was due this Friday. You were both free at 7:30, and then you could see what restaurants were available in your region that your partner wanted to go to that had a booking available, and you could click to book. So it was, the whole process was seamless. It was an amazing product. However, I mean, two things that sort of really prevented users from really getting into that feature. Firstly, when we launched, the second wave of COVID hit and people were just a bit funny about going out, obviously. And secondly, what we learned was, even though this process was absolutely gorgeous and like the product was just beautiful, even the most prolific daters are only going to go on a date night once a fortnight, once a month. You know, if you're, you know, in a good sort of rhythm of going on date nights. And what that meant was it was really hard to get users to adopt some kind of meaningful pattern of using the app, because even if they used it that one time and they had an amazing experience, the chances of them remembering to use it next month when they have another date night, you know, that was just really difficult. And so we'd launched this date night feature in New Zealand, and we were putting a lot of energy into marketing it, and we were just kind of struggling to get traction. Meanwhile, we had just launched the calendar feature in the US, so nothing else, didn't have a homepage, didn't have any navigation. It was just the calendar feature, and we just sort of saw this start to organically grow. We did a little bit on SEO, released an article, top 5 shared calendar apps. And that started to rank really well. And what we saw was that users were searching to solve this problem. And that's where our app came in. And what we learned was that, you know, you might not do a date night every day, but you're going to check your calendar every day. And that is really, really important for making your app super sticky and retaining those customers.
Okay. Erica, so if I'm understanding the timeline properly, you had the date night feature because that was the main core benefit of the app, but then you didn't have the calendar feature. It was not until the calendar feature where things started really taking off. Is that right?
Yeah. So we had the calendar feature there, but it wasn't our hero feature.
I got you.
So when you landed in the app, it was all about date night. It was all about get that date night booked. And the calendar was sort of a thing that we used to facilitate date night. We needed the calendar there because we needed to know when our users were free so that we could make, you know, useful suggestions of when they could go on date night. But we were kind of missing the point that actually just the day-to-day management of the calendar was what was really getting our users excited. And because we didn't cloud that offering when we launched in the US, that was what people, you know, were gravitating to. And that's what was getting us this sort of traction that we weren't seeing here in New Zealand.
I love it. I want to get to why you decided to launch different features in different countries, but 303 Experience has a great question. Hey, Erica, how did you get your first 100 users? Because obviously, Erica, you need users to see what they're doing. Are they using the date night? Are they using the calendar feature?
Yeah. So, I mean, everything for us came down to that one article, top five shared calendars.
Can I pull it up?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah, I love this example too, because it's just, I think we forget about it. One of the things I've been talking about is don't forget about SEO. And I know it's hard, but I think it definitely helps. When I look up top calendar, is it couples apps? Is that what I'm supposed to look for on Google?
Yeah, I think it's on our blog too. So if you've got our website open, it will be the Hero.
Yeah, I'll pull it up.
Hero article.
Yep, here we go.
So, yeah, I mean, and this article has evolved over time, but when we first released it, it was literally just a, a list of top five apps with ours at the top. It was really basic. I don't think we really expected anything to come of this. A friend of mine who's an SEO expert said we need to do this. And so, yeah. So we did. And, it's just interesting the things that really work. And this still is a major driver for volume for us today. And so I think, having those utility features that tie back to a problem that people are actually trying to solve, and understanding what people are searching on Google, that's really been key to our strategy. So we've played this out over a number of different sort of themes. One of the other themes that performs really well for us is apps for long distance relationships. And so we've made sure that we've got features that really support couples being in long distance relationships. And for us, it wasn't, we were able to add these features while still complementing our core product, even though that is not, we want to support all relationships. So we've got a simple feature of if you and your partner are in a different location, it displays the time zones, the local time zones down each side of the app. So you can see what time it is for your partner. Having those little things that you can tie back to key terms that people are searching in Google has been really, really helpful for us.
That's amazing. So that's where their first users came from. This article right here.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Erica, if I were ever to pitch this to a client, they'd be like, why in the world would I promote some of my competitors? Why were you so, I guess, quote unquote, ballsy about just putting some of your competitors out there?
I don't think we were worried about putting our competitors out there because I think our angle has always been quite different from our competitors. So we, if we look at who's on that list, probably the closest in terms of a core feature offering is probably Timetree. However, we, Timetree, you can add in friends, family, and we're really focused on a couple that are in the relationship. And so by being for two and being for couples, it really makes our app feel really unique. And you get, couples get that emotive reason for wanting to join Coupler versus wanting to join Timetree. And so I think, and obviously, we played up how much better our app is in the description.
You are number one.
So we're number one. So yeah, look, I don't think you should be afraid of addressing who your competitors are in articles. I think, for this to look legitimate and not just, a couple of sort of brag piece, we have to be including our competitors. So I think that's one of the reasons it was successful.
I love it. Okay. And then what about launching different features? Why not just launch it everywhere? Why did you just pick the calendar just for the US and then some of the dating features just for New Zealand?
Yeah. So we needed the calendar was really, really complex to build. It sounds simple. I mean, a calendar has existed and we all know how a calendar works, but when you're trying to overlay two people's calendars, things start to get complicated. And so we needed a bigger concentration of users in order to get enough user feedback so we could iterate the product to make it really, really good. And so that was the reason behind releasing the calendar everywhere versus releasing the date night feature, which required a lot of custom integrations, custom content. Like, it was very localized, wasn't scalable, in all honesty. So we couldn't possibly have launched the date night feature everywhere with the budgets that we had. And so we, you know, the decision to launch the calendar features, just the calendar features elsewhere, was really just about getting enough user feedback so we could be iterating that part of the product quickly to get it to, like, you know, just be perfect for our users.
Yeah. I want to, not to throw everything, not to reveal everything, Erica, but I do want to say, like, Erica is ranking number one here, shared calendar app for couples. According to my tools, there's about 1,300 searches. And so don't sleep on it. Somebody else from an event that I met was like, Steve, I'm deploying this type of strategy, Erica, where it's like top shared apps. His app is number one, and he's running like PPC campaigns, so SEM campaigns, to drive traffic, and it's working well for him as well. But love that.
Yeah, it's real back to basics, but you know,
I love it.
It still works. So,
and the fact that you have other apps, it, like, it makes Google feel like, okay, this is a legit article versus, you know, ranking other articles ahead of you. All right. I want to say hi to a few people. Luca, it's good to see you. Luca and I have been talking on Twitter or X here. Tudor Locke, we got Ben here, Aiden, and Crazy Experiments. Yo, Steve Wonder, let's go. I love it. And then what's up, Sam? We got some other questions. 303 is a big fan, Erica. Erica, well done with that article. How much did ASO play into your launch strategy? Did you focus on that at all? Is that a big driver for you today?
Yeah. So again, I guess I'd love to be able to say that we were really cognizant of ASO. I can actually not believe how little I knew about launching apps when we launched Coupler. So I didn't come from an app background. So no, it wasn't really part of our strategy. I think by chance rather than good management, we'd put in keywords into our listing and we'd done really well on those words, but it definitely wasn't on purpose. Now it is a huge part of our strategy. So, you know, now it's all about testing different keywords, seeing how we rank, making sure we have our language variations in the app store, and really trying to, you know, fine tune that because it does make such a difference.
Aiden says, Erica, did you produce a press pack? How did you get that? And who did you send it to if you did produce a press pack? Did you look at PR at all?
Yeah, we did. So for the date feature, we did have a press pack that we were working with, again, another friend in New Zealand. And that definitely helped. I mean, it seems to be easier to get media cut through in New Zealand than in the US because we are a small country. So whenever someone does something interesting, people want to know about it. And we did have a publicist that did some work, and we managed to get on some local news stations and get some articles published. And that definitely helped us get customers in New Zealand. But again, what we found was that because we were acquiring customers through these sort of media channels, they weren't particularly sticky. Like, they weren't coming in with really high intent on the problem that we were solving. They'd come in because they'd seen something cool online or and thought, hey, I'll check this out, and they just weren't hanging around. So I think press is really great for brand building in terms of creating, you know, getting users that are really sticky and love your product. I'm not so sure. It definitely wasn't the case for us.
We can brainstorm a bit. Do you think it helped with your SEO ranking at all? Like, getting the fact that from other press articles?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, backlinks always are helpful. And we should, you know, everyone who's got an SEO strategy should be trying to build those. So yes, it did help in that respect.
Okay. I apologize for sniffling into the mic. I used to try to mic myself. So I'm trying to hide myself when I'm like sniffling or trying to do a thing. Mary's here. Hey, Mary. She's a good friend of mine. Erica, what's the best way to get the word out when you have an app like yours that people didn't realize they needed before, you know, they knew it existed? Mary's got a similar app where people need it, but they don't know they need it. Erica.
Yeah. it's an interesting question, isn't it? And I think it's just, I think it's a real mixture of all of these sort of tactics, SEO, ASO, you know, having a social presence. What we found was people do know they need, for us, people do know they needed that, the product, because we were seeing so much high intent search volume. And now what we're experiencing is word of mouth growth as well. So, you know, people are telling their friends about it. So look, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think it's a slow burn. If you haven't got loads and loads of marketing budget to sort of scream from the rooftops, hey, you need this, then it is going to be a bit of a slow burn. And any articles that are on, you know, SEO, they do take months to sort of, you know, get to the top of the list if they do that. And so it is just about being in a place where you're giving anyone who is looking to solve whatever problem you're trying to solve, making sure that you're there when they're looking.
Yeah. And, you know, just to give Mary a tip from an SEO perspective too. So Mary's got an app that helps you remember people's names. Mary, like, you know, I just Googled how to remember names, and Keyword Everywhere is the tool I'm using right now, but it said 600,000 search volume, which when we were comparing, wow, roughly around the same volume. So people aren't looking for it, Mary. You just got to go figure out where they are.
Yeah, I feel like I need this app.
Yeah, it's called Name Skills if you want to check it out. You're a trooper, Steve, for hosting while under the weather. Yeah, I'm trying to. I skipped out last week. Last week was my wife's birthday. And so I was like, okay, no live stream. Let's pay attention. Back to the day night thing. How did you go about figuring out which features to put behind a paywall?
Yeah. So this is a good question, because this was really deliberate. We tried to raise money in New Zealand. And, you know, it was right when the sort of capital markets were collapsing. And also we learned that New Zealanders don't back consumer apps. We have no history of investment in consumer apps. There's been no consumer apps to come out of New Zealand. So the fundraising market was doubly hard. And, you know, it was really clear that getting any sort of meaningful investment at that time was going to be hard. And so we needed to get money to keep going. And so we literally put everything behind a paywall. So it wasn't a hard paywall where, you know, it was still a free app to download, but once you got into the app, there was very little that you could do without paying. So I wouldn't even say we had any free features. And that strategy was really successful for us. So we launched that strategy probably 14, 15 months ago. And it was driven out of necessity, basically. What was really interesting about launching the paywall is you find out really quickly what your users don't like about your app. And so, you know, when you're free, people are quite, you know, people tolerate a lot. And it was a massive learning curve for us. We thought we'd been in market for a year by that stage. We thought we had it all figured out. And then very quickly we found out we absolutely didn't. And so the learning curve was really steep there. In terms of the improvements we made on our product. But yeah, the paywall, that was just how we made our decision there. We recently started thinking more about, you know, how can we improve this experience for free users, because mainly driven by, we were getting some pretty, you know, bad reviews on the App Store that nothing was for free. And, you know, users don't really like that. And so we started being more cognizant about what we could do. And so we ran a couple of A-B tests around revealing more of, so all of the features free, but for a set time period. And so we chose 7 days. So we made it that you could see your partner's calendar for the next 7 days rolling. But after that period, there was a paywall. And that actually increased conversion to paid. So that was really interesting. So what we found was being able to demonstrate more of our features to users, we actually raised conversion while keeping our free users happy as well.
I like that. I'm going to clip that up. Okay. Write that out. Back. All right, Erica, since you brought up A-B testing, you saw that you've been testing a higher price as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, we always have A/B tests running. I love testing things. I'm just like, I'm a real data driven person. So, this A/B testing gets me excited. And I know, you know, we sort of talked about, well, what impact does price have on, you know, on all of your key metrics? And so what we've seen, you know, from testing lower prices and higher prices is that customers use price as a proxy for value and quality. And so what we saw was when we tested a lower price point, we actually didn't increase conversion at all. But we did increase churn, which was really interesting. So what it said to us was users are coming into the app, they're signing up, but because it's cheap, they're not necessarily associating our product with value or with quality. And so it becomes more disposable. And then when we tested a higher price, we were seeing similar or a little bit higher conversion, but the users were stickier, which was just, you know, super, super fascinating. Obviously, this is not going to apply to all apps. But I think my takeout from that is I wouldn't be afraid to test higher prices. And I wouldn't assume if you lower your price, you're going to get more conversions, because that's just definitely not what we found.
Yeah, that's interesting. I really do like that. And I think what we found too is we just had John, and sometimes rounded numbers. And so he was $19.99, $20 for the longest time. And then he moved to $30 and he saw higher conversions.
Erica. Really?
Yeah, he saw higher conversions. Obviously made more money too, but he saw higher conversions and the trial to pay didn't change as much. But then when he converted that to New Zealand dollars, it was like 42, or Australian dollars is in his case, but it was like 42. And then when he dropped that down to like 39, so like a more rounded number that we're all used to, he saw an increase in conversions too. So be careful when you're like changing prices. That your default, like it looks normal in other countries, not just your main country, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. There's so many apps in New Zealand where we see they've just used like a pricing converter tool and the prices make no sense at all. And one thing that we did was we went through, we converted our prices using a tool based around GDP, which was like an interesting way to do it. But then we also pulled in our competitors' prices into the same model and just went through each line and, you know, picked a reasonable price. What we don't do now is we don't A/B test in every country, because it just becomes unruly to sort of make all of those prices make sense. But what we'll do is we'll pilot A/B tests in the US, and then if it looks okay, we go and test in other markets. It's definitely not a case of we can transfer all of our learnings from the US to other markets. All markets behave differently. And so I think it's really important, any pricing test, to just, you know, make sure you're testing it by market.
I like it. Okay, I do see a bunch of questions, and I will promise to get to the question, but I do want to talk to Erica about this, because we prepared right before we had this. But you talked about how paid acquisition plays a critical role for your app.
Yeah, so it's, I think with any app, when you're trying to learn and really, you know, make the product the best it can be, you need a base level of users. And so for us, paid acquisition, and we have mainly focused on the App Store, so ASA up until now, was really key for us just getting the volume of users into our app where we could get meaningful data on their behavior. And then as we go on, you know, paid acquisition will always form part of our, you know, overall growth strategy. However, we want to really make sure that we're not overweighting that. So for us, an ideal ratio is 20% paid, 80% organic. And what that is really about is just making sure that we're growing in a really sustainable way, that our cost to acquire customers is reasonable, and that we're not, you know, sort of, I guess, falsely growing this engine just by chucking lots of money in, because, you know, it's just not, you know, it's not a sustainable growth strategy, and there's always going to be an end to that. all of these sort of platforms have their limits. And so I think, like Meta and ASA and so forth. And so I think really being mindful of keeping that ratio in check can sort of stop you overspending, and just making sure that we've got that growth strategy, sustainable growth strategy in place.
Erica, because you're so data-driven, how did you come up with the 20%?
How did I come up with the 20%? I think
20% paid.
To us, it just sounds like a really reasonable kind of goal. So, okay,
I just wanted to know
our numbers all work at 20%. So,
I do like it because I'll have clients where it's almost like 80% Erica paid and then 20%. And I was like, let me fix that a little bit. Let me fix that. Split a little bit.
Yeah. Too. It's always a risk, right? Because then if you turn the tap off, then your growth dries up. So,
Yeah. It's crazy because I think, the way I'm feeling, and that's why I wanted to talk about this topic is if you do need a paid model, and then for our apps, we just initiated ASA as well. And I was like, well, 1.5 is not where we need to be. Can I just spend at one? And I'm willing to spend at $1 per install. Right. But I've also noticed when there is an 80-20 split, 80 on the paid side, the ASO becomes a lot easier for me to move keywords. So I'm like, well, maybe it needs to be 80-20 paid in the beginning and then flip slowly to 50-50 and then slowly move to your ideal rate. I don't know. I don't know what the right ratio is and what the launch is, but it needs to be a non-zero number from a paid side.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. I mean, you can't be going for the 80-20 right from day dot. It might be 100% paid to start with. So, for us, because we're an app for couples, we are always going to have sort of a minimum of 50-50 because for every paid download we get a free one when the user invites their partner to the app. And so that ratio is probably makes a little bit more sense for us to maintain. There will just be times at the start, if you've got no users and ASA is your only route to acquiring them, then of course, you need to get people into the platform to really start to understand, well, have you got something here?
All right, Erica, let's give the people what they want. All right. Let's answer their questions. All right. LinkedIn user. what was the GDP conversion tool, Erica?
I think I just downloaded a GDP, per capita sort of index from Google and chucked it in an Excel spreadsheet. So nothing fancy there.
I've also heard of the Big Mac. If you look up Big Mac index or something, the Big Mac rule, that's another way of figuring out how to change your prices for the different countries. Okay. And then DC Native says, what's the revenue difference between Android and iOS?
Oh, huge. So this is a funny one for us because, coming from a world, again, I just say we knew nothing and so made lots of mistakes. We actually started building iOS and Android in parallel and we never should have done that. It just meant we were making mistakes on two platforms. When we went to launch our paywall, we on purpose sort of pulled back on Android and would just focus on iOS. That was really the platform that we were looking to monetize because the App Store is so much more advanced than the Play Store in terms of users are used to paying for apps. There's higher conversion rates, there's more revenue being generated through the App Store. So that made sense for us. What it has meant is that over time, probably the difference between the Android app and the iOS app has gotten larger. We've actually just hired now an Android developer to sort of start to bring that back up to parity. Up until very recently, we weren't even charging for our Android app. And it's not really something that we focus on at the moment either, just because our attention is on iOS.
Yeah, love it. Okay. Aiden says, in the app, is there a way that the guys can be alerted when interesting things happen so that they can discover something cool and impress their other half?
Yeah, so this was the date feature that we built in New Zealand. But the way that we did that was we were inputting everything that was cool to do. And so obviously just, you know, super unscalable. What we're hoping to do, and this is something that we're working on at the moment, is we are looking to bring back the date feature, but it's going to be user-driven. So if you go on a date, say, Steve, in your area, and you think it's really cool, you can actually add review that in Coupler. And then if you want to share that with your local network, you know, other users will be able to see that. So yeah, it's something that we're working on at the moment, and we're hoping to get out probably later this year.
That's a great idea. All right. 301, 303, what do you think about onboarding? What is your flow like? Do you make people register right away?
Yeah. I am really proud of our onboarding. So I'm glad this question came up. Can we do that?
Yeah, of course, Erica. Whatever you want. Whatever you want. All right. I'm going to pull it up right now. Let me move some things from my desktop. All right. Great ratings right here in the US. I'm going to open it up.
Yeah. So, first of all, what I will say as well is we have a really high conversion rate of our onboarding. So we get about 95% of users through account creation and landing on the homepage, which is pretty significant. So, and this is something that we tested a lot. And so what we do here is we go through all of the key features so that users understand. It's just, again, iterate and, you know, a reinforcement of what they would have seen on the App Store and really making sure they know what they're going to get when they go through the app and what this, you know, what the secret sauce is going to be at the end. And so, yep, get started. We can sign in here.
Love it. I love it.
And
nice.
Straight away. So we'll just X out of that. Oh, okay. So because you've already got an account, we won't see the full flow, but I'll talk through what happens. So usually after the how it works, we do have a few more onboarding screens. And what we'd see is we ask our user's first name. And this is really important because what we do is we then personalize what the user sees within the app. We ask the partner's first name. And what we've learned is that users love personalized push notifications and anything like that. But what actually we found our users really enjoy, our users resonate more with is notifications where we use their partner's name. And so, you know, if they're in a phase of they haven't invited their partner yet, we'll say, hey, Erica, it's time to remind Will to join Coupler. And that has really good cut through. So that's the reason for asking that up front. Then what we do is after we've asked both partners' names, we get the couples to sync their calendars. And this is one of those things where I think in most cases you'd say, well, you're getting users to sync their calendars. They haven't even landed in the app yet. That seems really onerous. But remembering that we've reiterated to them what the whole experience is going to be about. And so we do get a lot of users to sync their calendars there. And what that means is that when they land on the app, they've got something to look at. We then ask them to turn on notifications. And then the final stage, we get them to invite their partner. And so when they land in the home screen, they'll see, you know, this is all about me as a couple. The app is telling me both me and my partner's names. And then when I go into the calendar tab, which is, you know, our aha moment of seeing my calendar and my partner's calendar side by side, you know, we're going to see something in there because we've already asked the user to sync their calendar. And that's been very effective for us.
Yeah. Erica, stop me if you're like, Steve, no. But here, I have him. And then I had to find it. But yeah, so continue. Nice to meet you. Have access. I love the fact that, you know, you are in the, during the onboarding process, you are actually getting me to try to invite, you know, my partner. Cause I think that's very important as well. And I'm sure, you know, forcing them than making them. And I also like the fact that you are allowing me to skip here too. You know, if people just couldn't, they want to get straight to it. Because I had one client, Erica, where that skip would just take you to the next screen. I'm like, dude, I thought skip would be like taking me, like actually literally skipping the whole entire onboarding, but it wasn't. So getting access to that, all that stuff is critical here. And then boom, paywall at the end.
Yeah. So, I mean, this isn't going to work for everyone. I think our onboarding seems relatively long in comparison to other apps. And also, one of the first things our Android developer said when he came in was like, you know, this is just doesn't work for Android. He's like, Android users are used to like just getting in. They're not used to seeing a set up an account sort of process. And so, and that was like a real light bulb moment for us. I don't use an Android phone. And so I wasn't, you know, aware of that. And so I think that's another thing to be mindful of, is that your onboarding process on different platforms could look completely different.
Yeah. I like it too. I want to go back to one last thing you said when you're like, we just locked up a lot of content and now you're starting to think about free features. A friend of mine, Rich from the UK, he tested a hard paywall versus like locked content. Now Apple is starting to reject apps that have hard paywalls. So if you're in that realm and you're trying to decide between, you know, a hard paywall and not a hard paywall, a soft paywall, just lock up everything. Kind of like what Erica did in the very beginning, because it acts like a not a soft paywall, but, and I also think that I'm sort of leaning towards that. And that's what we did with our app too, because then people can see like how much content and what they can do within the app. Be like, okay, now I'm in. Right. Especially with apps that have a lot of content, like meditation apps, I don't think you should do a hard paywall. You should just lock up a lot of your content so that people can see all the content you have and then be like, oh, this has a lot of stuff. Let me buy this particular app.
So, yeah.
I like it. Okay. Erica, I'm dying here, but I'm going to survive. All right. I'm going to ask one more question and then we'll get to the app audit side of things. Limit says, what do you do when it comes to push notifications and email? And I know you covered a little bit with the push notification side of things.
Yeah, I mean, we are really advanced in this respect. I think it's one of the things that we've done really well. So we manage all of our push notifications and emails from Customer.io, and all of our push notifications are managed through Customer.io by someone in marketing, rather than, you know, it being at site and developer driven. So we have all of our events and triggers pushing through to CIO. And then we have, and all of our attributes as well. So we can see when people have taken certain actions and then drive campaigns that way, using first and last names and personalized information to do so. And that has really been a game changer for us. You know, I think the difference between someone getting a notification, hey, this event has, you know, there's a new event, versus Will has put an event, that's my partner's name, Will has put an event in my calendar, Erica, you know, come and have a look at that. That is so much more engaging than just sort of, the notification that could be from anyone.
I like it. Hey, Anthony said this. I thought this was interesting. In the app, you have the blog on the homepage.
Yeah. So this is something that our users can turn on and off, because it's not going to be for everyone.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, having that sort of piece of content that's really around couples has been, you know, it's been a great source of engagement for us. Look, some people hate it. And so that is why that is why we give users the ability to turn it off if they don't want to see it. But we try and update that pretty regularly. And, you know, and what we see is that users are coming into the app, and that's just it's another thing for them to sort of look at and dwell in the app. And hopefully we're providing some really interesting insights along the way as well. So.
All right. All right, Erica, I know there's a few other questions like from Aiden that we'll try to get to if we have time, but let's get into the app audit side of the show. And then we like to start off every app audit with some dad jokes. All right. Winner takes all, because Erica's got one, but she's got a really good one. So Erica, would you like me to go first? Or would you like to go first?
I'll go first.
Hold on one second. Let me get everything ready. Okay, ready. I'm ready for you.
Okay. Why can't Elton John eat lettuce?
Why?
Because he's a rocket man.
Okay, I like it. Let's see. What do I got? I got a few. I mean, oh, Erica, that is my laugh. I'm barely able to talk right now. All right, I've done this one. I'll do this one. Whatever. All right, Erica, why was the broom late for the meeting?
I don't know.
It overswept. There you go. All right, but E, if you thought Erica's joke was better, and put S if you thought my joke was better, and I'm sure Erica and I will come up with something to play for. All right, so people are liking the jokes, Erica. See, they're laughing.
Yes.
Which is not 100%. All right, now if you want us to take a look at your app in a future live stream, all you got to do is go to appmasters.com/audit, appmasters.com/audit. Okay, let's get into the apps. We've got Amir's app, and Amir wants more help with getting subscribers on Android. Very hard job to do, but we're up for it. All right, Erica, let's take a look. So here's his app, lock screen clock widget app. So it looks like you could customize your lock screen with some cool widgets. Shall we take a look at the app?
Let's
do this. All right. Let me see. Do this first. All right. Whoops. Okay. Let's go ahead and say this. I think it's going to be really hard to monetize on Android, but some clients were like 50-50. Now it's like 70-30. So here we go. No kidding. He's going straight into it.
A widget, something that Android has ordinarily. You know, so on iOS, they have like iOS widgets. Is this something that's available on Android?
I think so. I don't know. I'm not an Android user either. I think what's missing, like Erica, your onboarding was super great. It led with the benefits. You knew the benefits. You A/B tested that. Amir, like there was no onboarding. I could barely see anything. It went straight to this particular page. So definitely have an onboarding process. And then go ahead, Erica.
Yeah. In my experience, you know, if you can get users to invest a little something into the app, the more likely they are to sort of hang around. If there's been no time commitment, no investment of anything, and by investment I mean, you know, is there some sort of data that I can put in, or is there something I can put into the app that makes it feel more like mine that I've put something into? Otherwise, my inclination, if I'm just hit with a paywall, is just probably to leave if I haven't been given a real reason to hang around.
And honestly, I don't like the annual. I know you probably want people on the annual. I don't like the layout here. I like my ideal plan in the middle a little bit. I mean, when you do card tricks, they usually pick the middle. You know, everybody looks at the middle. So I would try to move this. My eyes, like the balance seems a little bit off to me because my eyes are right here because it says best offer, but the subscribe is right here. Just put everything here. Play around with the price a little bit. And I know you're trying to decoy, which is great. That's the way I would do it too. But I might even play around with annual right here and then like a $7.99 for lifetime if there's no like server costs and per usage costs. And that is the annual becomes a decoy and you get everybody on the lifetime. Just because it's Android, you might want to try that.
The other thing you might want to try is combining, is like actually making the price the button. So you know how you've got a separate button for subscribe. So you've actually got to make two taps to select. Are you selecting the price and then subscribe? Could you do it at one? Could be an idea.
Yeah. Let's see what happens. So I'm tapping on the prices. Yeah, you're right. It's auto-selected on annual, but yeah, if I wanted to change prices, I'd have to do. And plus, nobody wants to subscribe. You got to just put like unlock unlimited, unlock all widgets. And on the onboarding, I would like to see what kind of widgets you have before you just hit me with the paywall. Let's see what happens after I say it X. Yeah, like this type of stuff. This is cool looking stuff. It would have been cool to just see some of this on the onboarding. Get me jazzed up.
Yeah, I think just the other thing I'd say going back to that free page, is it anything that is free? Because we've seems like we've got a lot of Red Crosses on the free options. You know, is there any reason for me continuing? If I wanted to have another look, I'm not really getting any kind of reasons to have a look before I start paying, because it's showing me that nothing is for free.
Yep. And look, if I tap on premium clocks, I'm starting to, you just hit me with the paywall. Show me what those look like and then just lock them up. I know I'm under premium clocks, but like, just show them to me. Show me the visuals. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I want this one. Then yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. Let me upgrade now. So
yeah, I think this is really important, particularly when you're selling something that, like a clock, which is available on your phone anyway. You have to be able to prove that you're infinitely better than what is already available for free. So, you know, don't hide anything from your users. Let them see how awesome you are before you ask them to pay.
Yeah. And you could take Erica's word for that, because you have a calendar, you know, share calendar app, but like, yeah, you got to really impress them. I love that. Okay. Erica, you want to take a peek at who won? Let me look at this. Where's all my, okay. I got to have sound drops. Okay. S, thank you. E. And then Mary had a good insight. Erica, I find that US mostly recognizes that as arugula. I find looks when I called it rocket. That's probably why. I was like, what is a rocket?
Rocket mistake.
Okay. But they liked it. Okay. So I think we're tied right now. And then it was
technicality.
Yeah, on a technicality. I apologize. Not doing okay, Erica. I'm not disappointed. Okay, let's answer some questions here too. All right. Luca, just because Luca, we've been interacting. Luca says, okay. Aiden has a question. Luca, I'll answer your question. How did you balance the calendar being an important feature while avoiding feature creep? It's a great question.
Yeah. I'm not, Steve, how do you interpret that question?
So like, how do you balance like building this feature versus building like, cause I work with a lot of developers who are like, I want to build, you know, everything, you know, like everything. And then just, I want to build this. And they just keep building versus trying to market. And so feature creep would be just having a long list of features they want to build and just continually focusing on building all these features and not really analyzing if it's working or not.
Yeah. Okay, so I think it is, I mean, for us, it's something that we have always got to be mindful of. I guess the way that we probably look at it is in terms of what are the outcomes that we're trying to get. And so for us, retention is really important. Obviously, top of funnel was great, so acquiring new users, and that's definitely what we can do with new features. But actually, if we go back to why are our users in the app at the moment, and at the moment, a lot of our users are driven by, you know, that original reason that they searched on the internet for, so a shared calendar. And so we better make sure if those users came into our app for that you know, we're satisfying that need. And the only way to look at that is through retention. I think when you get a user in and they've shown an intent of wanting to like your product, but you can't keep them around, it's a really good signal that something isn't quite right. And so by keeping an eye on those key metrics, it'll sort of tell you where you need to be focusing your attention. And so that's really how we've tried to balance and think about that. We're really mindful that, you know, the shared calendar, it might not be the sexiest feature or, you know, the most exciting to talk about, but it is at the end of the day, the core of our product. And because we're charging for something that is a calendar that, you know, that you can get alternative solutions that are free out there, it better be the best, you know, shared calendar for couples available, because otherwise we will just cease to exist.
I love it. Luca says, hey, yo. He's giving props to our plans, Erica. Mine's fake though, but thank you.
Okay. Oh, mine's real. Okay.
All right. That's somebody salty after losing that joke round, huh?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. All right. Lucas says, do you really have to wait 7 days after changing the keywords, title, subtitle, or before changing, seeing results for a couple of days? I guess this is an ASO question. You got any input for Luca, Erica?
Yeah, I think you do need to wait. I think there's no point sort of, you know, if I think the risk you run by not waiting is that you've given yourself a false negative. So I think always wait, maybe even wait more than 7 days. 2 weeks, I think, is a nice sort of timeline at least. But yeah.
I agree. I like it. Yeah, you want to give yourself ample opportunity, because sometimes we'll even see apps like out of nowhere just start to climb, and they were just like stuck at 2 or 3 for the longest time, and they just start to climb out of nowhere too. So Luca, I would wait a little bit. I mean, especially if it's an important keyword, give it some time, right? So, and I'm doing with my app just like messing around a bunch of stuff. All right, let's get into Ollie. Is this the same Ollie? Ollie, is this you? Hey, yo, Ollie. All right, Ollie says he's got this app. You don't got one more. Erica, do you got one more joke? Just I thought I'd ask before I continue.
I don't know. Now I'm really worried about sort of, you know, language barriers here.
It's funny.
I don't want to be humiliated twice.
Oh, come on. It was a good joke. All right. We got Ollie's joke. How can I improve downloads despite ASO? What are the best marketing strategies I could follow? So it looks like a note app to capture ideas. Erica, you got some ideas for him?
Yeah, so I actually downloaded this one because it was on iOS. So I had a wee little look. First of all, I like how clean the UI looks. It's like, you know, really simple. And I think that's what you want when you've got a note-taking app, because, you know, you're writing notes. I think one of the first things I'd say, and I think we sort of talked about this in the other example as well, is that I found the onboarding was really brief.
Let me pull up the app then. Okay. Oh, man. Ollie, I thought it was going to be iOS. I thought I could continue with Apple, but then yeah, you said continue with Google and email. Okay. Oh my God. You're killing me, bro. All right, let me. Erica, you don't make me check my email, do you? Do you as well?
If you sign in with email, yes, but not with any other sign in method. But we have sign in with Apple as well, which most users kind of take.
All right, Ollie. Well, you gotta look at your drop off. Erica's drop off is really good. Well, completion rate is really good. 95% is the highest I've seen. Okay. Oh yeah. So yeah, that was it. I'm here. I'm in the app.
Yeah. So for me, that just wasn't clear what I need to do now. And so I think you always, you know, when you get someone into your app, the goal is always to get them to the aha moment as quick as possible. And so what is the thing that I could get them to do during the onboarding that might help to sort of get that process going? And so because my onboarding is so brief, you know, do I want them to try and like tell me what I'm thinking about now, so I could create a note so that when they land in the app, they see that note. You know, that could be one way to do that. But yeah, it just wasn't clear what I'm supposed to do now. I think just on that home screen, there's a little plus button. It's in the bottom right hand corner. And that's obviously a way to add new notes. I would be making that really big. Just, you know, that's your hero. If that's your hero action, you want people to go and add, you know, add new stashes, add new notes. Like, let's like really illuminate that and make that enormous on the screen in comparison to the other buttons.
I like it. I guess I don't know what the difference between this stash and, you know, and this big thing. What's this? I don't get it. Oh
yeah. So I think,
is it the same thing, Ollie? Okay. I don't know. Yeah. Go ahead, Erica. I was going to pull up your app and your onboarding, show it off again.
Yeah. So I just sort of struggled with what was the thing that I wanted, that I was wanting to do here. I think when you tap the text box on the bottom there, and you add a new note, it actually adds a heading, which does something different to what that does when you go onto the next page, even though it's the same text box. So that wasn't 100% clear. But yeah, I really think if you were to just highlight what is the aha moment and really getting users to take that first action that would make the world of difference.
I think I get it now. This is like a book. So when I do the plus sign, it's like adding a new book in, so to speak. And this is a quick little, okay, I think. Oh no, maybe it's the same. I have no idea. I'm completely confused. And honestly, like, I don't think you need more downloads, Ollie. Like, you just need to work on this product a little bit and figure out what the monetization strategy is going to be too. Because I do feel like this is a big mistake. Yeah, go ahead, Erica.
Yeah, sorry. The one other thing I'd say is I know he's got really detailed instructions there on the getting started. And if you were to open that, it's sort of, it does take you to a list of everything that you can do. The one sort of caution I would say, or like, just this is me just as personal preference, I always find if I need a page of instructions on how the user does something, it's probably too complicated. I really want to build something where the user doesn't need any instructions. So that's always like kind of the goal, is that I you know, I don't need any tutorials. I don't need to be told, because it's just really intuitive. Right. And so I think, you know, obviously that's like the big lofty goal. You could add a few, you know, maybe one or two little bullet points, but you don't really want to have to tell the user a page of instructions on how to make something work.
I'll give you a couple examples, Ollie, that did it well. Coupla, like, as you can see, nice to meet you. I can continue with, and then add your partner's name. Now you're just taking me down the entire funnel and guiding me on what the app, what I should be doing within the app, obviously paywall, and then get me straight into the app. The other example I'm going to pull up too is the one I really like that is more in your realm, Ollie, is a productivity app called, and this is a new video that's coming up, but this is the biggest mistake I see with app developers. So like onboarding, super good onboarding, paywall with the discount. And then after that, you get hit with choose your first habit. Like, I can't do anything else. They want you to do something. Then track your progress. I like the email, get a personalized experience, blah, 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 allow track. And then now they're like, swipe. This is your first habit. Swipe right to complete it. Type here to mark it as done. This is your first habit. You know, go. Wait, I guess I already did it. Oh, this is the one thing. What you said, Erica, give them that hit, right? Like, make them feel, where is that wow moment? And I really like that the dopamine hit was there. 1 day streak, swipe left to undo it. And then now you can add your next habit, allow notifications. They're just continually guiding me through the entire process, versus where other apps, I'll just come down after the paywall, they're just hit with the blank page, which, Ollie, no offense, that's what I see after the, you know, the onboarding. You're like, here, blank page, enjoy. I'm like, what? You know, you don't stage a home. If you're selling a home, you don't keep it empty, you stage it. And you need to, like, I don't know if that analogy hits, but that, you, same thing. You want to take them down the entire flow. But
yeah. Yeah, I agree.
All right, Erica, let's see. Did I miss anything that you want to make sure we cover?
No, I think we've got it. How are you feeling?
Okay. My nose is going crazy. I wish I was like, man, I don't have any tissues, but I'm okay. I'm great, actually, Erica. I beat you on the dad joke round. So I'm feeling amazing. Well, the app is called Coupla. So go check it out. If you got a partner, if you got a long-term relationship, long-distance relationship, it's a great app. You can manage so many different things. And like Eric said, hey, if we're going to build something that you already legit have in your app, we better make it the best. And she did just that. So it is called Coupla, and check it out in the iOS App Store. Erica, if the audience wants to follow up with you and, you know, say thank you for coming on, do you want to send them anywhere else?
Yeah, you can check out my LinkedIn, I believe. You can link us to that, Steve.
We already linked it up into your favorite podcast app and then YouTube description as well.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. So say hi. And then next week, I'm back. Guys, I took one day off just to celebrate my wife. I'm looking at my calendar. All right, we're going to talk all about how ChatGPT and other similar tools will help you analyze your marketing efforts and enhance your marketing efforts as well. A friend of mine that's been on the podcast before comes back every couple of years, Lior, he's going to be back to do that. So every Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific. Erica, thank you so much for waking up so early. It is legit 6 a.m. now, 7 a.m. in New Zealand. So thank you so much for coming on and doing this with me.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, guys. And thank you for all the warm wishes. Thanks, Louise. All right, guys. Have a great weekend. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Tired of overpaying for App Store optimization? Get unlimited ASO and app marketing support to increase your keyword rankings, downloads, and more importantly, your revenue. Learn more at asomasters.com.
Thanks for listening to the App Masters podcast. For show notes and amazing app marketing content, check out appmasters.co.